Hare Krishna. We sincerely welcome you to Sri Radha Gopinath Temple. Today is a day where our long-awaited dream is about to be fulfilled. A few years ago, we remember when Yamuna Devi Prabhu, Dinatarani Devi Prabhu were both with us at the Puna Yatra for hours, speaking about Krishna, and again here in this temple room. Yamuna Prabhu came to Srila Prabhupada in 1966 at 26 Second Avenue, at the very, very beginning of Srila Prabhupada's mission. She helped one of the six devotees who started the second temple in San Francisco. Really became Prabhupada's own daughter. They went to London on Prabhupada's order. Srila Prabhupada said some of his sannyasi godbrothers struggled like anything to get started in London, but were not successful. But three of Prabhupada's grihastha couples went to London. It created a Hare Krishna explosion. How they came there, the austerities they performed, they had nothing, no funding, they didn't know people. Sometimes they were sleeping in warehouses. But seeing Prabhupada's sacrifice for them, they were willing to make any sacrifice to assist Srila Prabhupada. There was nothing that these devotees would not endure to reciprocate with Prabhupada's love by helping him spread bhakti throughout the world. And by their amazing efforts, a few people just came to London. Nobody ever heard of them. And shortly after that, the number one record song in Europe was the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, sung by Yamuna Devi Prabhu. And also a very best-selling record album, the Radha Krishna Temple. And one of the tracks of that album is Brahma Samhita verses, sung by Yamuna Devi Prabhu. And Prabhupada liked it so much that he ordered every temple in the world from now to come that during the prime time of a temple is the greeting of the deities. That's like the crescendo of the activities of the temple, is the greeting of the deities after they're bathed, after they're dressed beautifully. And Prabhupada's order was that for the temple greeting, the song of Yamuna singing should be played. And she's heard in about 400 places every single day during that prime time of Krishna consciousness. And once some leaders stopped it in some temples, saying, so many brahmacharis, why should they listen to a woman singing? It's not good. And when Prabhupada heard that, he said, this is transcendental to all of these considerations. He said, Yamuna's singing is a spiritual symphony. in order to be played every day. And after really, really pleasing Prabhupada so much, Prabhupada was so overwhelmed with gratitude for these devotees, what they did in San Francisco, what they did in London. Prabhupada decided he wanted to bring his society to India. So who do you think he brought with him? The people who he trusted the most. And Yamuna Devi was one of those few people. She came and traveled throughout India with Srila Prabhupada. She was one of the first pujaris. Srila Prabhupada personally taught her how to cook and encouraged her to learn cooking from so many different places. Her cooking, her preaching, her singing, her personality, her devotion. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj used to tell me very emotionally that Prabhupada told us that Yamuna had attained bhava. That means love for Krishna. And she wrote a cookbook, Lord Krishna's Cuisine, and it was awarded the number one best cookbook in the world for that year. That means every type of diet cookbooks. It's the number one cookbook for the year, Lord Krishna's Cuisine. And she is like a worshipable deity in my life. I remember. I don't want to embarrass her, but if I do, I will feel successful. I first met her. The first day I came to Cross Maidan, before I met Prabhupada, it was in the day, and I found a Krishna book at a book table. I had no money, but I just asked if I could borrow it and read it. And I just sat down on the ground in this huge bundle. And Yamuna Devi Prabhu was playing harmonium, I think. She was singing in a microphone on the stage. There was no one on the stage except her. She was just all alone on the stage singing beautiful songs. And I think she was singing Bhaja Hure Mana. And I was just so deeply moved. Because I was living with all these old sadhus in Himalayas previous to this. And here was this young American lady, her eyes closed, singing with such deep emotion and devotion. I was transported to a place I didn't know. Later I found out it was Vrindavan. And it was a place I never wanted to leave. And then we have Her Grace Dinatarani Devi Prabhu, a very close associate of our beloved Guru Maharaj Srila Prabhupada. She was, I believe, original pujari for Radharasa Bihari. One of the originals. Maybe not the original, but at Juhu, she was, when Radharasa Bihari was in that little shack, little tent or whatever it was, she was the pujari. And Prabhupada spent so much time. And she did various wonderful services for Prabhupada and the Vaishnavas. And she's just such a pure-hearted, like a goddess of devotion. I could speak for so many things of what I would like to speak. but you hear me speak too much. I would personally like to just end by saying I am so deeply honored and grateful that both of you have come to give us your divine association. Srila Prabhupada has really descended into our temple room to bless us through their hearts and through their words. Let us very loudly and enthusiastically show our gratitude by chanting Hari Bol. There is Kaustubha Prabhu and Gita Priya Devi, two of my very favorite devotees from New York City, who are, you'll see in the future what they do. Kaustubha Prabhu was one of the most important book distributors for many years, and now they are doing very, very relevant, creative, and very, very effective ways of reaching people's hearts with pure bhakti. And for those of you who go to Govinda's restaurant and like the pizza, Kaustubha Prabhu is the guru of all of our pizza makers. And I think he might have learned from Gita Priya Devi. But two of my dearest friends, and I'm so grateful you are both here. Let us welcome them very enthusiastically to Radha Gopinath. Let's put microphone for both of them together.
Hare Krishna. Dear devotees, it's been 2 years and about 8 months since being here with you, in 11 months in Sri Radha Gopinath Mandir. And I can say that every day since I left, I've appreciated your company very deeply. And Radhanath Swami is so dear in our ashram. We live in a very tiny corner of Prabhupada's legacy called Sharanagati in Canada, British Columbia. And I always say with some honesty that it's the most inhospitable place for pilgrims to visit. We are a full 100% no facility zone. It's the antithesis of what this glorious place is. But nonetheless, we feel deeply connected with you on another level that hasn't anything to do with facility. And I don't know how many times we've shown the film The Simple Temple to pilgrims that come into our ashram. Last year we had about only 1,000 that came for various kirtans and programs, and a good number of those saw the film The Simple Temple. And we glorify you so much with our words, and are inspired by you so much. So this pilgrimage to India, we have so much gratitude for, that we were allowed to come once again here. And as Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj says, that he came for the juice, to get the juice, to spread this juice more in other places in the world. We also come here for that. And that's in the form of each and every one of you in terms of Sangha. The love that we have for the Brahmacharis is just immense. When I'm outside the temple and I see the Brahmachari laundry blowing in the wind, it looks like jewels to me in the crown of Chaupati. And the Grihastha ashram here is like none other in the world. And in the center of it all, under Srila Prabhupada's powerful presence, is His Holiness and His Divine Grace, Radhanath Swami. Everything here is Radhanath Swami's energy, His potency, His purity. And that's unique on the whole planet. So because of our affection and for Him, He asked us to speak. Of course, I immediately said no and gave many reasons why I wouldn't. But then I've attended the classes, the last three classes here. And when you have the opportunity to listen to this kind of Krishna consciousness, you have to be changed. All the fear that I have of public speaking has to take second place to honoring Radhanath Swami's request. And the fact is that I don't speak in public. I didn't, even when I was with Srila Prabhupada, I'd beg him not to ask me to speak. But this time, I do have to have the one caveat that in the last few years, I've had a little extra challenge with speaking, in that when I listen to Radhanath Swami lecture, I cry. When I'm in kirtan, I also sometimes cry. And when I speak, I also sometimes cry. But it's not really sadness. It just comes. So you'll have to overlook that with me. Just forgive me for that, because it'll come and go. And I'm working on getting better at that. So Dinatarane Prabhu and I, when we were thinking what would be something appropriate to try to share with you, we thought of mercy. Mercy is the embodiment of this temple. This is a place of mercy. It's for us. We've been a month and a half in Holy Vrindavan Dham, and we've tried in our individual ways. We brought six devotees are in our party, our Sharanagati chanting party, and we've tried to relish the holy Dham very deeply through many hours of kirtan a day and going to holy places and begging for the mercy of our great Vaishnavas in the past and our great Vaishnavas in the present, for their mercy to enter into the holy Dham. So today we thought that we would each speak something a little different, that Dinatarane would speak about principles of mercy in our disciplic succession, and I might speak a little bit about Srila Prabhupada's merciful revelation of Vrindavan to me personally. So with your permission, we'll try to speak something. Hare Krishna.
Is it on? Okay. I offer my humble apologies for speaking at all. I'm simply like a parrot speaking not realized knowledge, but just am so embarrassed to sit in the company of all of you wonderful Vaishnavas who are so knowledgeable and scholarly and try to speak something about the quality of mercy and compassion in our line. So like a sparrow plucking at the drops of water in the ocean, I'm simply beg your forgiveness for my foolish attempt. Mukham karoti vachalam pangam langayate girim yat kripa tamaham vande sri gurum dinatarane. So every day, one of the most important prayers we're saying is this, vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindubhya eva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. So devotees, they are compared to, first of all, desire trees. Then oceans of mercy. They are oceans of mercy. And then they are full of compassion for all of the fallen souls. So this compassion that is so emblematic within the hearts of true devotees is a really wonderful thing. And it's so wonderful that it is the very reason that we sit here today, because of the Lord's compassion and mercy, and especially because of the mercy of Vaishnavas, other devotees, of mercy and their intense compassion for us. So just before coming today, yesterday evening, Nathji Prabhu gave me an old dictionary, and I looked up both mercy and compassion in this dictionary, and it had a very interesting definition, fellow feeling. That was the definition. And I thought how appropriate that is. It's very simple, very small, but very appropriate. And then underneath it, it said that this person cannot bear the sufferings of others. So then if we take that understanding and we follow this path of progression of compassion all the way back to its source, we find that the root of compassion is Srimati Radharani. In fact, her first bath every day is taken in the nectar of compassion. And then that compassion, which Krishna has so deeply, which is such a quality in the Lord and his incarnations, manifested so wonderfully in this Kali Yuga through the prayers of Advaita Acharya, who by his kindness could not stand to see the effect that Kali Yuga was having on the souls of this age, how they had become plunged into material life and material admonstrance, affecting them so deeply. And he begged the Lord, please come and correct this. Out of your immense compassion, please come. So then Lord Chaitanya came, and he is Namo Mahavaranyaya. He is the most munificent, most merciful incarnation. But perhaps even more merciful than Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Lord Nityananda, who even when he was attacked by Madhai physically, his mercy was ever present. And the Lord Chaitanya wanted to take up his chakra, but Nityananda said, no, we must be so merciful. And ultimately, both Jagai and Madhai, these sinful wretches, were delivered in a most wonderful way. And then among the associates of the Lord, this quality is so deeply embedded within their hearts. And some of the wonderful acharyas who have written the histories of the life of the Lord Chaitanya and his principal associates, like Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami and Vrindavan Das Thakur Goswami, Lochan Das, who's we're honoring today, they have told wonderful stories where when the Lord was a little bit strict, when the Lord was trying to teach us all by using one of his close intimate associates as an example, the devotees could not even bear that and would actually go before the Lord and ask for him, for special mercy. This morning Maharaj was speaking so beautifully about Prataparudra Maharaj. And his story is so wonderful because in several parts of that, of the unraveling of that wonderful story, the devotees stepped forward on behalf of Prataparudra Maharaj before Lord Chaitanya. And as within virtually all of the instances when they did that, the Lord said, I will go to Alarnath. I will not stay here. This is not for me to become involved in this. And the devotees would say, no, we try to find some other solution. So in the case of Prataparudra Maharaj, when Swarup Damodar, the other devotees were coming forward on his behalf, it was such a heart-wrenching saga, the whole thing. Because as Maharaj was saying this morning, the Lord was very heavy in his admonition of Prataparudra Maharaj and physically and graphically in front of the assembly of devotees, he admonished him and tried to get away from his touch and his company. So the devotees at the same time were feeling so much pain in their heart for the plight of Prataparudra Maharaj because they knew he was a great devotee. And they would go to him and say, no, don't worry. You will get the mercy of the Lord. Inevitably it will come. Don't worry. Just be a little patient. And Prataparudra Maharaj offered some of the most plaintive, beautiful prayers within the pages of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he said, this Lord is known to be merciful to everyone but this lowly king, Prataparudra Maharaj. Everyone has received his mercy but me. And he determined he was going to kill himself at this point. So finally, as Maharaj was saying, he got the mercy of the Lord in a very abundant and wonderful way. And this was so much due to the kindness and the mercy and compassion on him of the devotees. We have the other instance of Chota Haridas. Chota Haridas, when he committed this, what was a very small mistake. His mistake was speech, exchanging some words. He was actually sent on a mission to get some of this wonderful rice that Madhavi Devi had. Madhavi Devi is not a young woman. She's an old woman, older lady. And still, just for speaking with her, the Lord banished him. And immediately the devotees came forward and they were consoling him and saying, don't worry, he's just a little angry now, but he will change and he will welcome you back in his association. So 1 year passed like this. And the devotees were still coming. And not only were they coming to him, they were going to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu was saying, I will go to Alarnath. I will move to Alarnath. You're doing this. So ultimately, as Maharaj said, the deliverance of Chota Haridas was the most glorious thing because in his spiritual body, he singing every night, every day for the Lord. And another instance, a wonderful instance, the story of Gopinath Patanayaka, the son of Bhavananda Roy, brother of Ramananda Roy, Sri Ramananda Roy. And he was a treasurer of the king. And every day he would actually be a tax collector and he would collect money and somehow he became 200,000 shells, kahanas of shells, short. And so this was found out by the Bhadojana, the son of the king. And he could not come up with the money and there was an exchange where Gopinath Patanayaka made a critical remark about another son of the king who had some deformity or some idiosyncrasy that he would hold his neck up and look at the sky. So Gopinath Patanayaka had some beautiful horses and he wanted to give these horses to the king in exchange for the arrears of what he owed. And so this son of the king shortchanged him and said they were worth much less than they were. And so Gopinath Patanayaka made this comment that at least they don't look up in the air. And so angered very much angered this son. And so the next thing, Gopinath Patanayaka was put up on the Changa, which in the top 100 ways to die in this material world, that would be way at the bottom of my list, is these swords. Standing up in a row, all these rows of swords, and you're literally thrown onto this, onto these swords. So not only was Gopinath Patanayaka put on the, ready for being thrown on the Changa, but his whole family was arrested. Vaninath Roy, his very wonderful brother. And they went to the Lord. The devotees, where their hearts were breaking, and they went to the Lord and they said, "This is the family of Bhavananda Roy and your close associate, Ramananda Roy, and please do something, you know, anything." And again, the Lord was a little bit resistant to do that. He said, "He's gotten himself in this predicament. Why am I? Am I supposed to go with a begging bowl to the king to get him out of this? No, I will go to Alarnath." You know. The devotees were very, very so feeling of compassion that they again went to him. And finally, some resolution was made, and the family were relieved of this predicament. But there are so many examples in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and others, shastras, of the devotees showing the utmost mercy and compassion to others. And this is an ornament, the ornament of the devotees that I think most affects the preaching movement of Krishna consciousness, because the compassion of the devotee is not like ordinary compassion. It is a compassion that includes the very serious concern for the deliverance of that person, whole material existence. So just like I may go out and if I see a beggar in the street, I may give some money. And it can be said I am showing mercy, I am having some compassion for this child. But a devotee's compassion is far beyond that, because he is thinking, let me give prasadam to this child so that he will be eternally benefited. A devotee's compassion has that extra element to it that makes it a transcendental and wonderful thing. So coming down from Lord Chaitanya and his personal associates, every time we've heard of the great Vaishnavacharyas, they have been deeply imbued with this quality of great compassion for other fallen souls. And had they not been, we would not be sitting here today. If they had only been concerned with their own spiritual life, sitting in the Himalayas, or in some other way, simply concerned with themselves or their family or their close associates, we would not be sitting here today. It's because Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote four wonderful songbooks explicating the entire process of spiritual life, the entire process of prayer. What is prayer? How do you pray? How do you act as a devotee? What are the characteristics of humility? All of these things he wrote. And that is the polar opposite of what we understand in the material world. In the material world, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote this so beautifully in his Amara Jivana prayer from Sharanagati. The second line of this prayer, "Para suki duki sada mitya basi para duka suki karo." And he says essentially there, I have no compassion. As a matter of fact, to see others suffering is the source of my greatest happiness. And if I see someone else happy, it gives me great pain. Great pain. That is the source of my suffering. So he is writing that to instruct us that this is the condition not wanted by the devotees. And real devotees are just the opposite. If they see someone else happy in Krishna consciousness, happy in the progression of their spiritual life, it gives them great joy. And if someone else is suffering, they're unable to bear that suffering. And is very evident in their character, very evident in their demeanor and how they behave towards devotees. So lastly, I'd like to just speak a little about Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and how he was the embodiment, the personification, principle of compassion and mercy that our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, so much imbibed and manifested towards us at every second of the way. It's funny, in the early days, we had very little information about Srila Saraswati Thakur. We had his English translation to the Sri Brahma Samhita, which was pretty much indecipherable to most of us. We had some things Srila Prabhupada had said about him, that he is a Singha Guru. And the stories we heard were he was so formidable that I was a little afraid of him, a little afraid to approach him in any way. But then as more and more devotees started speaking and writing about Srila Saraswati Thakur, this element of intense compassion and mercy was again and again brought out by the devotees, his disciples, Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers. I was surprised because I did not expect that. But everything from the fact that he had a rule that every time he was anywhere near or any devotees in this Bagh Bazar temple in the middle of Calcutta, within a 2-block radius, no one was to go hungry in that area. Prasadam must always be available. And even once he chastised his sannyasis who had pushed off some persons who were coming begging, and he said, you think you are so great now that you don't have to show compassion to others? So just little things like that. And then among the devotees, Srila Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj said that every time a devotee had difficulty or went away, Srila Saraswati Thakur would cry buckets of tears. He had so much compassion. Why are they leaving? We have this wonderful process. Why are they leaving? And there was one wonderful story told about one of his disciples. They were opening a new temple somewhere, I've forgotten where it was. And this devotee was a brahmachari. And one day he had some discussion, had some talk with a woman. And the other devotees thought this was very inappropriate and they harshly criticized him for this. And this devotee was so embarrassed and so disgusted with himself that he left. He was a big part of all of the arrangements for building this temple and setting this temple up so that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur could come. And he just left and no one knew where he was. And they were in a big city. And so when Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur came, he sat down, he immediately said, "Where is this devotee?" And so the devotee said, "I'm sorry, he's left." And they told him the story, that he was caught in some proximity talking to a woman, and we chastised him heavily for it, and he left. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said, "You go find him." He said, "This temple is worth nothing to me if we do not care for the devotees in it. The temple is nothing." And so they went out. All of these devotees had no idea where to go. But then one devotee remembered that in his life he had been a watch repairman. And so they went to every single watch repair store in the city. And he was in one of them. They asked, "Do you have this man?" "Oh, yes, he's in the back. He's working." So they went back there and they felt so much remorse and begged him to come back. And he very, with great joy and happiness, went back and met Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. So this person was recounting this story about the compassion and mercy of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. And he said, "I know this story so well because it was me that it happened to." And so that was his telling of that wonderful aspect. So sometimes we wonder, how is it that Srila Prabhupada at 70 years old got on a boat, and for 31 days through horrible seas and seasickness and heart attacks and so many challenges. Why did he do that? Why did he come to the West at that advanced age? And if you trace it through every layer, you will come to the understanding that it was his intense compassion and mercy to the fallen souls based on what he received from his spiritual master and Krishna. And so we are so much blessed to be able to sit here today to directly taste, to tangibly taste this level of wonderful compassion and mercy. So thank you. Jamuna will now speak about Srila Prabhupada's mercy and compassion.
Vrindavan, recently a disciple of Radhanath Swami Maharaj, asked the question, what's your relationship with Srila Prabhupada and Vrindavan? So it was interesting, the answer that came out. And I was thinking maybe I could share that answer, because when we left Vrindavan, you know, you were just, how many of you were on the last yatra with Maharaj? Oh, thank you. So many. So when you leave Vrindavan, you all know what you felt that you were leaving behind. And there was one time, I'll jump to 73 already, although I'll start later, but it was one time when we were, Srila Prabhupada came in and out of Vrindavan many, many times in 1973, because the project was initiated in March of 1972. Cornerstone was laid down then. And as disciples, Western disciples, who had no knowledge of the language, had no knowledge really of anything to do with business, we had no knowledge of many social customs that were to be observed in the Holy Dham. But we were given the task of trying to build the Krishna Balaram temple project in the Holy Dham. And I think every mistake that could be made, we made it. Just like Maharaj said this morning, you'll have so many obstacles in your spiritual life. That's what we're here for, is to accept the obstacles that Krishna puts in front of us so we learn how to get out of this material world. So in Vrindavan, in the Holy Dham, and also in Mayapur Dham, those were our first two big Dham projects in India. We made so many mistakes. And so therefore, Srila Prabhupada had to come in and out of the Dham to help us. And sometimes if you look at the folio, you'll see how many times he did come. Sometimes for even one day, sometimes for 2 days, but just to help us to allow the project to move forward in a timely fashion. So one time he came, very short time, and when we left Vrindavan, it was only Tejas, Gurudas, Yamuna, and Shamsundar. And we brought Prabhupada to the Delhi airport at that time. And the Delhi airport was almost empty. It was not like it is now. This was 1973. And there were, I remember we were sitting in a little group, and somehow the plane was delayed and we had to sit and sit. And we heard this click, 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 long time before we could see who the body belonged to, the click-clacks. So the click-clacks turned out to be a girl, maybe 20 years old, with high heel shoes on. You know those ones that are really tall? And then she had on the black stockings and the mini kind of mini dress on. And everybody was trying to not keep their eyes on the click-clack, but she just was really big presence. So Shamsundar said, he looked over at Prabhupada and he said, "We're not in Vrindavan anymore, Srila Prabhupada." And Prabhupada looked at him and he said, "Yes, we are in Vrindavan. This is not Vrindavan." And it made it so the light bulb turning on that, yes, you leave Vrindavan, but Vrindavan is also where? In the heart. Vrindavan is received through all of our senses. It's drunk in a very special way, using all of our senses. So when we leave the dham of Vrindavan, we have to bring that wherever we go. So fortunately, when we left Vrindavan just a few days ago, we came to Vrindavan South, which is the Chaupati Temple. Chaupati Temple is as much Vrindavan as the Holy Dham is for me. This temple, the atmosphere in this temple, their lordships in this temple, the presence of Maharaj, the worship of Srila Prabhupada, and the care that the devotees have for each other, this makes this place a very special part of Vrindavan. So when I was reflecting after leaving that Vrindavan and coming here, I was thinking, how can I adjust the answer of how Prabhupada revealed Vrindavan? And I came to three ways that Prabhupada revealed Vrindavan to this lowly, unfortunate, incarcerated soul who had the great bhagya or good fortune to meet Srila Prabhupada when I did. And that was by three ways. The first way was by his personal company. That means the mercy of the guru. That was the first way that I realized Vrindavan. Second way was the holy name. Through the holy name was part number two of that. And part number three of appreciating and realizing Vrindavan is Vaishnavas. The mercy of the Vaishnavas. So in way back in 1966 when I first went to my younger sister's wedding in September of 1966, I was only in New York for a few days. And I had very little exchange with Prabhupada, although it was very important. Because the first time you come in contact with Vaishnavas, it isn't a lukewarm position usually. It's what Maharaj spoke about. It's an intense experience. Either you can't relate to the devotees, or you really connect with the devotees. But it's very rarely in the middle. So that first time in New York, I was able to hear only one thing. And I want you to all think today, what is the first thing when you came to Krishna consciousness that you heard of the philosophy that really hit you? And you thought, oh, there's really something there. So for me, it was the story of the beauty in the jar and love and lust. Because I thought I'd been in love with somebody as a young girl. And after I heard that story, it's the first time I cried. First time I cried in Krishna consciousness. When I heard that story, it hit me just like a punch in the solar plexus. And I thought, oh, yes, this is true. There is in the material world so-called love, but it's nothing like the real love that I'm hearing about from Swamiji. That's the first thing I heard. So it was through hearing that I heard about Vrindavan, and we had one small painting in the temple of a lotus flower and Radha and Krishna dancing on the lotus flower. That's the first painting I remember seeing of Radha and Krishna in the New York temple. And by the time we left after, I think, only 10 days I was there, I left with my sister Janki, who was the first initiated female disciple of Prabhupada's, and her husband, Mukunda Das. And they were one of the first 12 disciples of Prabhupada. Then they went to San Francisco. I went with them. And we picked up two of our old friends from earlier. That was Sam Spierstra and Melanie Nagel, who turned out to be Shamsundar Das and Malati Devi Dasi. And with the help of a few more devotees or early interested people in Krishna consciousness, that second temple was started in San Francisco, January of 67. And at that time, Prabhupada had a schedule of Monday, Wednesday, Friday temple programs, and then Tuesdays and Thursdays he had darshans. And every morning, what did Prabhupada do in the morning? He went on a morning walk. So anyone who wanted to walk with Srila Prabhupada could. So one morning on a walk, I said, Swamiji, do you think sometime you could allow us to go to Vrindavan with you? And Prabhupada turned around. He was walking with his cane. He turned around and he said, yes, I will take you to Vrindavan one day, and I will show you Vrindavan on foot. So that just, oh, I thought this was the most hopeful thing I'd ever heard in my life. When we talk about hope, from fear to hope, this idea that one day on foot, Prabhupada or Swamiji would show us, reveal to us, what is Vrindavan. So from that second, from that walk, I was just waiting for when is that going to come. So then from that, the next revelation of Vrindavan was a jump to 1969. Then, you know, we went to London in 68, August, to try to start some British Yatra. It wasn't until the fall of 1969 that Srila Prabhupada actually arrived. So we were there about 1 year before he came. And when he came, it just so happened that we had met the Beatles, and one of the Beatles, this John Lennon, had a big estate called Tittenhurst Park. And so he invited Prabhupada and his disciples to come stay there with him. So again, every morning, Srila Prabhupada took his walk. And after his walk, he came back and sat down in his little room. It was a greeting room. Took off his socks and sat down with a harmonium or a drum or a pair of kartals and sang prayers. Now, I can't remember of any time in all the history of Prabhupada's presence with us other than this segment of time at John Lennon's where he did this, and he did it, inaugurated it, and did it alone. So at that time, by some rather remarkable arrangement, his servant secretary was Purushottam Das. And his cooks were the three of us, Janki, Malati, and Yamuna, cook servants. So one morning, Prabhupada was chanting a prayer. And I was on the stairs, really quiet, right by his room, right outside his room. And at the end of chanting the prayer, he called my name. How he knew I was there, I don't know. It was actually, to me, I felt very remarkable. But so I went in and said, so, what are you doing? I said, I'm listening, Srila Prabhupada. It's so beautiful, this chanting. And he said, so do you want to come in here and listen? I said, yes, very much. So at that time, the old thump, thump, drumming of the, probably heard tapes of those days where we knew one drum or two drum beats from Prabhupada. So he said, you can play drum and I will play harmonium. So, and Purushottam can play kartals. So then for several mornings we got to record Srila Prabhupada. So I wanted to just read to you this prayer that the first time I heard Prabhupada sing. Now, this is before songbooks. This is before tape ministries. This is before almost everything we have now in our Krishna consciousness movement. this is really the early days of Krishna consciousness. So if we heard Srila Prabhupada sing a prayer, we had no idea what he was singing. None. Unless he explained it to us, we knew Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Hare Krishna, Govinda Jai Jai, and of course the Bandeham prayers, Mangalacharana prayers. But it was really whatever you heard him sing, it was. So this is what Prabhupada was singing. This is a prayer by Narottam Das Thakur, Vigyapati, called Hari Hari Bifale. Hari Hari Bifale Janama Goinu Manusa Janama Poiya Radha Krishna Nabhajiya Janiya Sunya Bishokainu. The translation is, O Lord Hari, I have wasted my life. Although I have taken a rare human birth like a miser, I have not served Radha and Krishna. And thus I have unknowingly drunk poison. Now when Srila Prabhupada sang this bhajan, he repeated this line 8, 9, 10 times. So deeply he went into this, the mood of this prayer. I have not served Radha and Krishna. Then he, for the next verse, Goloke ra prema dana hori nama sankirtana ratinana janmilo keina tai sansara bishanale divanishiya jale judhaite nakoino bhai. Then he would sing this 8 or 10 times. Deeper, deeper, deeper he'd go into this prayer. This is translated of the treasure of divine love in Goloka Vrindavan has descended as the congregational chanting of Lord Hari's holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Why did my attraction for this chanting never come about? Day and night my heart burns in the fire of the poison of worldliness, and I have not accepted the means for relieving it. This is the new translation. In our old songbook, it was, day and night I'm burning in this dark world without working to make the correction. Then the next verse. Brajendra Nandana Jai Sochi Suta Hoi Lo Se Balaram Hoi Lo Nitai Dinahina Jata Chilo Hori name udarilo thara shakshi jaghai madai. Translation. Lord Krishna, the son of the king of Braja, became the son of Sachi, and Balaram became Nitai. The holy name delivered all those souls who were lowly and wretched. The two sinners, jaghai and madai, are evidence of this. And the last verse. Aha Prabhu Nanda Sutta Vrishabhanu Sutta Juta Karuna Kori Ho Baro Narottama Dashakai Natohilo Rango Payai Tomabine Ke Ache Amara. O Lord Krishna, son of Nanda, accompanied by the daughter of Vrishabhanu, please be merciful to me now. Narottama Das says, O Lord, please do not push me away from your reddish lotus feet, for who is there but my beloved except for you? So when I heard this prayer that Srila Prabhupada was singing, I said, so Swami, we called him Swamiji, I said, what does this prayer mean? And he explained it to me. And he said, so Yamuna Devi, what is your favorite prayer? And I only knew one. And that was from the first red brick volume of Srimad Bhagavatam, where the Shikshastika prayers are in the front. You know that? In the very front, it was with the original translation. And that's the only prayer I ever saw in print. So I said, well, I like the Shikshastika prayers. I said, that's very nice. So I said, so Swamiji, what is your favorite prayer? And he said, this prayer, Hari Hari Bifule. So when I heard it was talking about Vrindavan and the son of Nanda and Vrishabhanu, this was another layer of Prabhupada revealing Vrindavan without being in Vrindavan. So all these examples I'm giving of the first layer of knowing Vrindavan, it was all through one thing, Sravanam. Whatever I knew of Vrindavan was from these prayers and from hearing Prabhupada talk about Vrindavan in Srimad Bhagavatam. The actual, and the holy name, of course, the holy name comes in layers, doesn't it? For all of us. We hear the holy name, we're attracted to the holy name, we chant the holy name every day, we depend on the holy name. But there's sometimes a disparity between the chanting and the realization of our relish for the holy name. We may be completely dependent on the holy name, but we may not be conscious of the depths of the effectiveness of chanting the holy names. That comes in layers, and layer and layer and layer and layer until we're pure devotees. So at this time I was only a devotee for 3 years before Prabhupada actually brought us to India on a plane, set us down in India, and that was the beginning of his revelation of what Vrindavan was. And that came through that, when we landed in India, it was October 4th, 1970, and until March of 72, we traveled throughout India with Prabhupada on essentially one huge Nagar Sankirtan party. And what we did was chant. Constantly, we chanted with such feeling. It was a very intimate, small party, only about 20 devotees, and a third of them were women. This is a huge revelation of Prabhupada's mercy, is the fact that he allowed women the close proximity that he did to his person. This was revolutionary in our Vaishnava history. Prabhupada was a sannyasi and performed marriages. Prabhupada was a sannyasi and he allowed women on his personal Sankirtan party. He had allowed us to practice and serve through this chanting of the holy name. And we did that as a family, very close family. And the effect of that was deeply profound. It shocked India. It shocked India. There wasn't a place we went where the front page of the newspaper wasn't some article on the white dancing white elephants of devotees who were going through the streets chanting the holy names. So until March of 72, everything was really the holy name and Srila Prabhupada's person. And then, from then, I was left with my husband in Vrindavan to help to start the Vrindavan Temple project. And I think then the element of the mercy of Vaishnavas became very important, because, as was brought up this morning in a wonderful question to Maharaj, what happens after you've been a devotee for some time and some challenges come in the form of difficulty of working together, especially on the managerial level? How do we avoid offenses to each other? And it was in Vrindavan when we had this tremendous service requested of us of Srila Prabhupada to try to build a place for, especially Prabhupada wanted Vrindavan and Mayapur to be places for pilgrims to come from around the world, namely, at first, his disciples. He said to taste the beauty of the Dham, to hear in the Dham. He wanted that for both Mayapur and Vrindavan. So it was to be an international guest center. In the center of it, a temple with vibrant Krishna conscious activities going on, and a place for prasadam distribution. Said especially in Vrindavan, you won't be recognized so much for your scholarship. But if you distribute prasadam very nicely, and if you worship the deity very nicely, you will be respected in the end. So that was one of the principal reasons he wanted centers done. And there's many long stories of how Prabhupada very, very mercifully revealed Vrindavan to us. Sometimes with encouragement, sometimes with huge chastisement. The chastisement, how many of you have felt the kind chastisement of your Guru Maharaj? Please raise your hands. Not so many. Uh-huh. Well, perhaps you'll get that mercy one day in your life. Because Prabhupada gave us lots of that when we were trying to do the Vrindavan project. It's a special relationship that one has with a spiritual master, chastisement. And it's sometimes difficult when you're being chastised to appreciate the potency of chastisement. But in retrospect, that also becomes a great relishing factor of mercy that we continue to learn from years and years and years later. Isn't it? Because when you get chastised, you feel a little whip, a little like slapping. You feel your energy change when you're chastised. And it takes sometimes a long time to put that in perspective, the beauty of that chastisement. But that kind of mercy we got a great deal on the Vrindavan project. So in wrapping up, thinking of Prabhupada and mercy on Vrindavan, you can read a book like Mahanidhi Swami on appreciating Vrindavan and hear from many, many Shastras. Or you can attend every one of Radhanath Maharaj's incredible yatras, and you can feel, taste, hear, smell, touch, and breathe Vrindavan through the hearing process. When we heard this last experience that you, who went on the last yatra? Please raise your hands. Okay. So when we heard a story at Govardhan Hill where you all got the chance to cook over wood stoves on clay pots, offerings for Giriraj Maharaj, and make mental offerings for the pleasure of the Lord. I'm just thinking, I can't think of a more relishable festival, and you have so many festivals in Chaupati base that are beyond fathoming the nectar of. But when I heard about that one, it just went over the top of all the ones that I'd ever heard of. That the description of it was just so beautiful. So you're being revealed by the kindness of the holy name, your spiritual master, and other Vaishnavas, the mercy of the Vrindavan Dham experience. And here in Chaupati, I'm so deeply grateful to each and every one of you excuse me, that I've had a chance to know and hear from, learn from, especially that's at Radhanath Maharaj's feet. Because when he introduces someone, he introduces them in such a way that he, at least in my case, very clearly, he presents something that I'm not at all. And I have so far to go to be even an aspiring Vaishnav. But I'm deeply, deeply, deeply grateful to all of you for inspiring me in Krishna consciousness. and especially Radhanath Maharaj. And all glories to all of your mercy. Hare Krishna.
Is it on now? Would you like to hear a story of Srila Prabhupada chastising Jamuna Devi?
Lots to use.
This was an especially wonderful story because it illustrates how Srila Prabhupada was so dedicated to seeing that what we established in India was established properly, and that we took great care in how we served the Vaishnavas and how we served the deity. And this took place in Delhi, and why it was so profound to me is that I had just gotten to India, and I found out when I got into Bombay that my visa was only good for 3 weeks, and I had to leave India to get it renewed. And so I had to go to Nepal. And I can't even remember whether it was on the way there or on the way back. I came to the Delhi temple the devotees had just moved into, Naniketan. And Srila Prabhupada was there. And I had never met Jamuna before. That time, although one of my god sisters, Palika Devi, used Jamuna's quarters in Vrindavan to make a spaghetti dinner for us. I'll never forget that. I thought, in India, she has spaghetti. It's quite an amazing thing.
Italian family.
So, Srila Prabhupada was sitting on his Vyasa-san with this very stern, grave look on his face. And Jamuna Devi had just come, and she came and sat in the room, and a kirtan was going on.
I was leading kirtan.
She was actually leading the kirtan. Kirtan was going on, and Srila Prabhupada stopped the kirtan, right in the middle of the kirtan. And he looked over at Jamuna Devi, and he said, "How could you have let this happen?" Very, very strong. And Jamuna was not even from the Delhi temple. She was part of the Vrindavan project. She was just a visitor into the temple. "How could you let this happen?" He didn't say that of the temple president, Tejas. He didn't say that of anyone else. And so, of course, Jamuna didn't know what he was referring to. And then he looked at the deities and he said, "You have left Krishna sitting on the fence post." And she tried to interject, "Srila Prabhupada, I'm just visiting. I don't have anything to do with the deity program." But he chastised her, illustrating for us that what the Guru has given, what Srila Prabhupada has given, it's our duty to do what we can to try to preserve that. So Srila Prabhupada said to Jamuna, "I have trained you in deity worship." So he felt somehow that that should extend, I guess, to the Delhi area. But at that time, he said something very amazing that has stayed with me all of this time. He said, "You may think that this is a stone statue standing before you, stone idol." And he says, "And you may think, let me give this rubbish garland." I never forget how he said, "Let me give this rubbish garland to this stone statue, and Krishna will not mind. But he will remain a stone statue to you forever. So please take care," he said that. So he used Jamuna Devi, even though she had no responsibility there, to illustrate for us how important it was to take care in our service to Krishna, in our service to the devotees.
Yeah. We're supposed to help each other. That's what Sangha means. That we help each other to go back to Godhead under the merciful instruction of the spiritual master. And that's such a glorious thing to explore, because there's never an end to it. As long as we're breathing, there's no end to the potential of that one single thing. Helping each other to become Krishna conscious. That's in all rasas, isn't it? It isn't just this rasa or that rasa. It's in every instance, every minute of our existence. This is a place to take advantage of going back to Godhead by just following the instructions of the spiritual master and helping each other in a loving way. There was one other nice example of chastisement I could tell you about. It has to do with cleaning. So Srila Prabhupada was, when I see the pictures of the brahmacharis cleaning, it makes me so happy. Because I know what you're cleaning. You're cleaning your heart by cleaning the temple. So in the very beginning of the Vrindavan project, as you know, Srila Prabhupada, the room that he passed in, where his bed is, that room was where Srila Prabhupada sat behind his desk. So if we had a darshan, it was there. And then actually he slept in another room. But now that room is not being used for that. At any rate, when we first made the temple, I said we made every mistake you can. Well, one mistake, one really good one, was that the floor in Srila Prabhupada's room, what color is it?
Black.
So the people, and it's not a stone, it's not a granite floor, it's one of those amalgamate floors where you put color in it. I don't know what they're called in India. What is that, Marsh? Where you put, it's like a mixture and you put tints in it, the little marble chips in it like that. So they put in some kind of the wrong mixture of black in with the aggregate. So that when the floor dried, if you just rubbed your finger across it like this, your finger got black. So we were really nervous. How are we going to fix this? So we started a day and night cleaning crew, cleaning Prabhupada's floor. We'd wash it, dry it, black. Wash it, dry it, black. For days, we had this project of trying to get the floor so that it wouldn't show black. Nothing was working. So I was in charge of cleaning his rooms. So then with our brilliant intelligence, we decided to copy people who have white floors. So we put down the duddies and then put down the white sheets. So any tiny part of the floor that wasn't covered with the rugs and the white sheets, your feet get black. So you could have completely white sheets and two people come in the room and if they step on black, there's black footprints all over the white sheets. So Prabhupada, you know, he commented, said, who's done this? So whose shoulders did that fall on? And I was the only woman in the party. This is an interesting thing. All were men, and all had very important roles in the construction project. My role was the deity department and Prabhupada's rooms. So I had to make some ridiculous comment like, what would you like, Srila Prabhupada? I'm not sure what to do. I said, no intelligence. There's no intelligence there. That's very true, Srila Prabhupada. Do you have any suggestions how I could better take care of the room? I said, no, you can figure this out. You figure this out. So for days I was trying to think, what are we going to do? Finally we took up the sheets. Then Prabhupada said, where are the sheets? So the Prabhupada took them up. He said, that's your solution? So, really, I don't know how many months it took for those floors to be cleaned, but I got the... To show you how strict Prabhupada was with cleaning... We had a whole system that we would clean everything above the floor last. We'd do the floor first and then move up, clean everything up, and then come back down and clean the floor. So the whole room was cleaned twice. That's everything, every surface in his room, every morning. So one day Prabhupada came back from his walk He sat down at his desk. He looked at his desk. He reached across his desk. And on the edge of the desk was a staple gun. You know those 1.5-inch long staple guns? They're called mini staple guns. And this mini staple gun was in a plastic envelope, like a little sleeve, to protect it. Prabhupada reached across, took the staple gun, pulled it out of his case, opened the staple gun so it was laying flat, took his little pinky finger and went in the space between the knob and the staple, rubbed his finger, and he said, "Dust." Who has cleaned my room? I said, "Well, I did, Srila Prabhupada. Haven't I trained you how to clean the room?" "No, Srila Prabhupada, I'm so dull that I never ever thought to look there for dust." "Asara, useless." So Prabhupada was a little strict with me on cleaning. And strict in many ways, but, you know, I treasure today, I treasure that dust between Prabhupada's staple and his other side. Because when the spiritual master is strict with you, it helps you to be conscious of what conditioning means. Otherwise, conditioning is just a word. I'm conditioned from time immemorial. Is hard to wrap your mind around. It's just a huge thing, this conditioning. Unless we're trained by the spiritual master to get out of a conditioned state is very slow, can be slow. So when the spiritual master chastises you by giving you instructions on simple things like this, it's very helpful. Anyway, we certainly won't take any more of your valuable time. Thank you so much for...
Yes, thank you.
Is there any just like tiny question somebody might want to ask? No. Yes, Prabhuji, in the very back. If you chant with me. We don't need instruments, but we can pray. Actually, I love so much that you in this temple... chant not verse 29 and verse 30, but you chant so many nice verses. And now we're going to go back and institute this before our Bhagavatam class in the morning. Yes, Jim?
It's amazing because Jamuna does not lead kirtan in groups of people anymore. Hasn't for some time, but when we just visited Jayapataka Swami in the hospital, he was sitting taking lunch. We were taking lunch with him. And that was one of the things he kept requesting, "Please lead." So Jamuna would have to lead a kirtan. And then he said afterward, "Now another one." Mm-hmm. And so because he was asking, she couldn't refuse. But it was a revolutionary thing.
Hare Krishna. Jayapataka Maharaj ki jai. Jayapataka Maharaj ki jai. Jayapataka Maharaj ki jai. Gauranga. Sorry about that. Okay.
Thank you.
Govindam, all together.
Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami.
Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami.
Govindam
Adi Purusham Tam Bhajami. sorry.
Yep.
The Gauranga got my throat. Venum kanvanta maravinda tlayataksham bhavatam samasitam buddha sundarangam kandar pakoti kamaniya vishesha shobham govinda Tamaham bhajami Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham bhajami Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham bhajami Angani asha sakalam Jiya vriti manti Pasyanti panti kalyanti Chiram jaganti Ananda chinmaya saru Avigrahasya govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami Govindam Adi Purusham Bhajami O Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami Hare Krishna Gauranga Jai Sisi Radha Gopinath Ki Jai. Any other tiny questions? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj. There was one? No.
Mataji, we would like to have one question is that in your life, what is the thing that help means whatever realization which you have with Prabhupada, what is the thing that is touching you the most and what is the thing that you'll never forget in your life till this date which has really touched you so much with Prabhupada association that it is so touching in your life that even when you are there for the whole life in this material world, you will never forget it. Can you just share that realization with us?
Being conscious of Srila Prabhupada. That's the thing. Being conscious of Srila Prabhupada. Once I asked him, it was at the Magh Mela 1971 in February. And I told you we arrived in October 4th, 1970. So this was the first time that I had met Achyutananda Swami. And Achyutananda Swami had been living in the Gaudiya Math temple for some time. And he was a little aware of etiquette that I wasn't so aware of, because in my early years of Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada was so open to being merciful to the ladies that he never gave very much stricture of separation. So while we were at this Mag Mela program, every morning Kaushalya and I would get up at 1 in the morning, walk to Tribeni, get in a boat, go out, take a bath, come back, have all our rounds chanted by 4 a.m. And I'd come and sit right at the bottom of Prabhupada's Vyasasana. So Chitananda, later in the day, he came up to me and he said, Jamuna, have you noticed that where all the other women are sitting? I said, yes, I did. He said, well, you should be sitting there too, out there. So it was like way in the back, like some of you are way in the back. But the nice thing is, so are some of the men. Everybody has a back and a front in any crowd. So anyway, the next morning, instead of sitting at Prabhupada's lotus feet, as I usually did, I was sitting way in the back. And but it was about 10:30 in the morning, and I was hanging up my one sari, I had two saris. I was hanging it up on the Shamiana fence. And Prabhupada had recognized the bottom of my other sari, and he called my name. He saw it through his little opening in his tent. So he said, come. I came in. I paid my obeisances. And before I even got up, he looked at me with very plaintive eyes, and he said, so you don't like to hear anymore? And I burst into tears, as I do. I told you I do this. I have always done this. And I said, I love to hear from you more than ever, Srila Prabhupada. So to set the climate for this, I have to say that every single person in our party, this was what we lived for, was to hear Prabhupada. To be with Prabhupada was one thing, but to hear every morning his Bhagavatam class, it was, you know, have you been to Jaipur and you've seen them run to Radha Govinda's Mangal Arati in the morning? There's real enthusiasm for that. We would run to hear this morning program with Prabhupada. And he was speaking on the sixth canto. First time he gave lectures on sixth canto in Ajamil. So I said, Srila Prabhupada, more than anything in the world, that's all I want to hear. And he said, so why you weren't sitting? And I said, well, Achyutananda Swami told me that it was etiquette that I don't sit there, that I sit in the back, far in the back with the ladies. So he was a little quiet. He said, yes, that is etiquette. And then I said, Srila Prabhupada, how many times did you actually sit with your Guru Maharaj? Were you with your Guru Maharaj? And he said immediately, without a second response, I have never been away from him, not for one second, since I met him. And I said, I was a little forceful, I said, but how many times were you with him physically? And he said, very few. Maybe 5 or 6 times, but they were very intimate and very meaningful to me. And then he made a statement that was also repeated. I've seen other devotees say that Srila Prabhupada said this in their presence, but he personally said to me, he said, many, many of my God brothers, they were big, big sannyasis. And they thought that associating with the spiritual master personally was the most important thing. He said, but in some cases they are no better than mosquitoes on the lap of the king. And what is the business of mosquito? It is simply to suck blood. He said like that. He said, so don't think that that's the only way to associate with a spiritual master. He said, you try to hear. So for me, to answer your question, hearing and remembering Prabhupada are the two most important things in all my spiritual life. Thank you. Any other questions? You know, I think we approached the Chutananda and said none of the men are sitting. In other words, we were a stage. It was a stage. And we had Radha Madhava, who are now in Mayapur, were our worshipful deities. And then Srila Prabhupada was sitting on a makeshift asana. And generally speaking, all of the devotees, they stayed on the stage with Prabhupada. And our guests had, you know, the ropes, so the men were on one side and the ladies were on the other side. But I think just for shock value, this particular Maharaj just wanted me banished to the back because I was sitting so close to Prabhupada in the front. So then we approached him and said, do you want just all the ladies to sit out with the audience, or are all the men going to go too? Because sometimes Prabhupada would ask me for some bizarre reason to lead kirtans. And our whole kirtan party, we always sat together. It's awkward for half of a kirtan party to be in one place and then half of a kirtan party to be in the other place. It's a little awkward. I mean, it maybe could be done, but... So we went to him and said, well, would it be all right if the ladies sat over on the far end of the stage kind of thing? So that's what we ended up doing while we were in Jaipur, and that obviously was all right with Srila Prabhupada. But he knew it was, for me, it was a tremendous learning moment that I realized then that there would be a time in the future. Up until then, I never thought I couldn't even conceive of being separated from Prabhupada or that he would die. It just, I couldn't conceive of it. Because in 66, when he had his heart attack, we know from Jaladutta diary, and then in 67, Memorial Day, when he had his stroke, that was another defining moment. I was going to say, in terms of kirtan, I'll never forget that kirtan where Prabhupada, we got word from New York that if you want Swamiji to live, chant. And all these little brand new devotees, we were all devotees for days, if weeks. And we had a 24-hour kirtan, praying for Prabhupada's life in front of Lord Jagannath, Subhadra, and Balaram. And that was a defining moment. How many of you have chanted for 24 hours straight? Raise your hand. So it's a very intense experience where you don't leave the room. You just chant. Puniyatra is almost like that. And there's a little couple hours of rest, and the rest is kirtan and katha. And that's very nectarian. But I think that was a huge defining moment in my relationship with the Holy Name, was praying for Prabhupada's life in that one 24-hour period. But there are many, many, many. Each one of us, each one in this room has so many defining moments with their Guru Maharaj that, you know, they just come back and you learn from them every time you remember them. Prabhupada once made the simple, obvious comment that in order to remember, you must hear and chant. So your memory or remembering will become less effective to the degree that you hear less and chant less. So those three things of the nine processes of bhakti, they're also core to my relationship with Prabhupada, those three things. And in recent years, they've increased the hearing and chanting. Hare Krishna. Thank you so much again. All glories to all of you. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thank you. Sorry if we embarrassed you. Hare Krishna! Can we have a couple nice drummers?